About 3 years ago, I got to look at an Akkadian manuscript, and it was when I was trying to learn this language that nobody speaks, and I was reading through it, and when I got to a certain part to where in the writing they were talking about the first day of the new year, and the Babylonian people on the first day of the new year, I read that they made two promises to the gods. There's only two. Promise number one. Everything we stole last year, we will return promptly. So those of you who are looking for New Year's resolutions, these are ideas, okay? So promise number one, whatever we stole last year, we will return promptly. And this is me translating Akkadian, so take it for what it's worth. I figure y'all can't read it anyway, so you got to take my word for it. Promise number two. Some of you are like, what's Akkadian? Yeah, it's okay. Promise number two, pay all your debts. Pay all your debts promptly. You notice they gave no exact times, right? So whatever I stole last year, I will return, and whatever debts I have, I will pay. There are no more promises. And every year they made these same two promises. But here's the belief. We all would watch you as you made these promises. And if something bad happened to you, that meant you stole something that you haven't returned. And so we're all trying to figure out what it is you stole and who you stole from. Or if something bad happened to you, we all know you didn't pay your Visa card. That's how the world worked. You know, if something bad, if you died, we just assumed you had a lot of creditors and the gods, you know, took their vengeance. The Babylonians are the first ones to observe what's called New Year's resolutions. So it's the first record we have. For all we know, that's kind of who started the whole trend. The nation of Rome takes it up. And even now here in America, it is said that 45% of Americans, you know, what are percentages? But 45 Americans still try to make New Year's resolutions. And only 6% actually do what they said they were going to do. I went to a church last week, and we were in there in the preacher got up and he began to talk, and he had everybody repeat after him what he said. And I remember thinking, I don't like doing this. And then I thought, I'll make y'all do that. You know, no wonder none of you want to do it. You know, and I get in the pew and I think, I don't want to talk, especially if you're on the front row or something. You know, you got to, you know, turn around and wait forever. And then he had that magic moment, if any of you have ever been in church, where they have everybody stand up and they say, all right, let's greet one another. And you could almost hear this audible, oh. You know, nobody likes doing that. Now I got to turn around and talk to somebody I don't know. Or, you know, you're kind of forced to. I was waiting for, you know, extend the holy kiss or something, and I was out. I'm not doing that. So I kind of made this silent New Year's resolution. I'm not going to ask anybody this year to raise their hand, because I did it. And I thought, I don't want to do that. So I'll probably forget around February and then do my resolution. But feel free to remind me, you know, that I didn't do that. So that's kind of my little New Year's resolution. So how many of you, no, I'm kidding. Think to yourself, what is your resolution? And I know that we don't make, you know, at least half of us don't make resolutions. But I'm starting to think that there should be a time in your life to where you think to yourself, I need to make a change now. I need to start over here. I need to stop doing this. I need to quit doing this. Maybe it's biting your nails. That's what I do. And every year I think, I don't even think I'm going to stop anymore. Once you've been doing something for 40 years, you're not going to stop. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. It might, I guess, maybe. But it just gets harder and harder and harder. So maybe you have something in your life that you think, well, I want to stop doing this. Well, let me just kind of read what I wrote down here. Talking about, let's think about what our decisions are going to be. I know everybody in here has got something on their mind that they want to do, they need to do, or they need or want to stop doing. Maybe it's your new job. Maybe it's your decision to lose weight. Maybe it's your decision to gain weight. Maybe it's your decision to make a friend because you don't have any. Maybe it's some hobby that you'd like to make a permanent part of your daily routine. I know quite a few people who are, you know, posting videos to YouTube, and they told me, we want to make this a permanent job. Good luck with that. You know, but hey, you know, seriously, good luck. If you want to do that, I think you ought to try and do that. Maybe you used to do something recreationally. Oh, that's a bad way to put it. Maybe you used to do something occasionally. Maybe you did something because it was a prescription. Maybe you did something because you had to do it. And now recreation has become habit. Do I need to like wink to let y'all know what that is? Okay, some of you are like, what? Okay, see me afterwards, we'll go into more detail. Maybe you're tired of getting run over. Not literally. Maybe you're tired of losing your temper. Maybe you'd like to read your Bible more. Maybe you just like to read more. Maybe you're contemplating a serious change. This morning, what I want to do is not to give you some suggestions. Here's what you need to change in your life. I'm not that kind of preacher. So, you know, here's exactly what you need to change. Here's what I do want to do. Whatever it is you're thinking about doing, what I'd like to do is to think about that in terms of faith. So, what I want to tell you this morning is let me tell you why you won't follow through on this decision. Not because I'm psychic, not because I'm a prophet, but because these are the things that cause the 8%. There are four things. There are four things. They're biblical things that all four Brooks just read happened to Moses. Moses decided, I'm going to make sure these four things happen, and that's how Moses accomplished all that he accomplished. The Hebrew writer lays it out. You want a life of faith? This is what faith means. And if you live this life right here, what you are setting out to do won't just happen, but what you're setting out to do, you'll understand so much better. But if you don't do these, I'll almost guarantee you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. You're thinking about doing something different with the grandkids, or maybe there's the son-in-law that you absolutely cannot stand, and so you've got to figure out some way to see the grandkids and not see the son-in-law. Wow, there's that many of you. Okay. Here you're like, Sheesh. But you know, there's these little things we want to do. What I want to do is share with you the four. And all four of these have to do with faith. You read what Brooke said, by faith, by faith, by faith, by faith. Moses did these things. Well, by faith, let me tell you what's gonna help you to do all this. And Moses is really key here. You notice the Hebrew writer kind of left out the plagues part, left out Aaron and Miriam, left out the Ten Commandments, left out the golden calf. He left out all the good stuff, and he includes only some little bitty pieces. But these pieces are important, and I think they're important to us because they teach us how we can follow through. There's only four, so you know when we get to number four, we're good. Here's number one, fear. Fear. This is the worst one. This is actually somebody in this room. I'm kidding, it's not. That would have been cool, though. Look at, if you have your Bibles, I want you to be in Hebrews chapter 11. You won't have to turn anywhere else, I promise, and then if I make you do it, then just don't. So you just fight back. So Hebrews chapter 11, we're only going to be in those verses Brooks read. So verse 20, you know, 24, 25, 26, 27. That's it. And we'll kind of start at the bottom and move our way up. We'll go backwards, all right? So Hebrews chapter 11, verse 27, he says, by faith Moses left Egypt. He was not afraid of the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. Moses has this ability to see what is unseen. I remember the King James version of faith. Faith is the substance of, y'all remember? I didn't ask you to raise your hand, but I didn't say I wasn't going to ask you to talk. Faith is the substance of what? Things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Okay, now we do know our Bible. All right. And evidence of things not seen, which means faith is not that you actually know how this ends. Faith doesn't mean that you get all the answers. Faith means that even though you don't have the answers, you trust in what you cannot see. And I got to tell you, Moses is not the first one to do this. If you back up just a few verses in verse 23, you see that Moses' parents had the same faith. Look at verse 23. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child. Let me ask y'all. Y'all raised kids. We got grandfather right now, you know, patting the grandkids. I got this. Those of you who had parents and you looked down and you saw your baby when there was, I mean, Jacqueline, how old is Joanna? Like, what is she, a month? Two? 2 months, I'm behind. Okay, 2 months. How many of you looked down at this baby when they were born? Am I about, don't raise your hands. Think to yourself. How many of you looked down at this baby when they were born and you thought to yourself, this child is special? I said, don't raise your hands. It's okay. Yeah, it's all right. How about grandparents? How many of you saw the grandchild and you thought, this child is special? How many of you thought this child was more special than the kids you birthed? Some actual hands just went up in the back. Now that's the power of grandparents. So those of you parents think, wait till the grandparents get a hold. There's something, and Bob Turner said this, there's something about the grandchildren. They can do no wrong. They're like little princes and princesses. And then the parents just become the enemy, But Moses' parents looked to the child and they said, there's something special about this child. But it's like they can see the unseen. I don't think they looked at Moses and they thought, this is going to be the next leader of Israel. I think they just knew that God has a plan for Moses. And notice, when Pharaoh puts out this law that says all the children are going to be killed, we're not afraid of that law. I wonder how many of us are afraid because the doctors or the professionals have told us what will or won't happen. And we trust them, and I guess everything's over. Why does it have to be over? Why does fear get to govern? Why does it get to govern? And how many of us have made a decision to do better, but we're so afraid we do nothing? Fear cannot run your life. You can't just be afraid just to step out, but fear is controlling a lot of it. Fear did not control Moses. Fear did not control. Matter of fact, look at these texts right here. You don't have to, I put them on the screen. You ain't got to turn there. John 14:27, peace is what I leave with you. It is my own peace I give you. I do not give it as the world does. Do not be worried. Do not be upset. Do not be afraid. How about Psalm 23? We all know this one, right? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. How about Psalm 27:1? The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Bible is full of this. What do we got to be afraid of? What do we got to be afraid of? And we say it in church, and then we go home, and we're scared. Of what? Let me give you a secret here. When fear runs your life, it's not the doctors who are controlling the situation. It's not your friends. It's not your enemies. It's not even you. Do you know who it is? It's nothing. It's nothing. It's this fear of I don't know what. Here's what I'd like for the Unit Church of Christ to be. Here's what I'd like us to try to be. I would like for us to be whom God intended us to be, and that is to be dreamers. Look at that text from Acts 2:7. It's a quote from Joel. When God puts a spirit on you, what does he expect? He expects all of us in here to see visions and dream dreams. And we look at that and we think, well, that's what the Church of God does. We don't do that. It's the Church of Christ, right? So we read Acts, just not that one. God has every intention for you to see the unseen. He has every intention for you to dream big, big dreams. Every person I meet with, almost, I always ask the same question. If money wasn't an issue, if your mama wasn't an issue, if your husband wasn't an issue, if the dog wasn't an issue, if the kids weren't an issue, if you didn't have to mess with the grandkids, if you didn't have to do this over here, if you didn't buy 3 cats and you got to feed them all the time, if you didn't have to do none of that stuff, what would you do with your life? And you'd be amazed at the answers I get. I'd work for the post office. I'd be a greeter at Walmart. And there's a lot of them I look and think, man, you gotta get some better dreams. Like, you ain't. But some people are like, you know what I would do? I would go down and I'd play at one of them honky tonk bars in Nashville. That's what I did. Why would you do that? Because I can play. I've always wanted to play in front of people. I said, why don't you do it? Why don't you go down? Why don't you just go down there and play? Oh, I don't know. I'm not telling y'all what is and isn't okay. I'm not telling you what your dreams should be. What I'm telling you is that when fear governs your dreams, you have no dreams. And I promise you, when fear governs your dreams, you teach your children not to dream. And you teach your children that when the doctors come in and say the words no cure, your children start to say, oh, I guess there's no cure. You know what Christians do? I listen to no one. I know you're the doctor and everything. I'm a doctor too. Not a real one, but I mean, kind of. But I got what you're telling me. I understand what you, and some of you get upset with me because you tell me stuff and I say, yeah, okay. That's like my line. Yeah, okay. I don't believe you. Because nothing's impossible for me. Do you know why nothing's impossible for Adam Toon? Because nothing is impossible for my God. So if that mountain is too big for you, it's not too big for me. He just ain't moved it yet. Dream. What do you want to do? And I don't want to hear, oh, I'm too old. We're living longer than we've ever lived before. You know what I remember people saying 20 years ago? Oh, Social Security ain't going to be around for you. Ain't going to be around for none of us. And the same people now, like, I'm about to get that Social Security check. Yeah. Dream. Stop telling yourself what is and isn't going to happen. Don't let anyone tell you what you can and cannot. It's just God. Here's the second one, because the fear is the big one, but here's the second one. We don't take inventory. A lot of us we set out to do something that we don't say, I'm going to lose 28 pounds this year. I don't know how you came up with 28, but let's go on go with it. I'm going to lose 28 pounds this year. All right, what you going to do? I guess I'm just not going to eat. Okay. You consume about 5,800 calories a day. You've been consuming 5,800 calories a day. And so for you just to say, I'm going to do this today, that's not going to work. We got to take inventory here. How are you going to lose weight when the ding-dongs are still in the pantry? Now, some of y'all still eat ding-dongs. It's okay. I didn't ask for show of hands. It's all right. You're not going to judge in here. I want to stop doing this, but I'm going to keep it in the house, right? I'm going to stop wasting 6.25 hours a day scrolling, and yet I can't get off the phone. Take an inventory of your life. You know why there's only 8% that can get it done? Because we just say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do this. Everybody says they're going to do it. Only if you do it. Because people rarely take stock. Look at Moses, verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as a greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Church, if everything's important, nothing's important. We have to decide exactly what's important and exactly what we want to do. Remember what Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. We have to actually decide what's working and what's not working. You remember the story of the prodigal son? When he's sitting in, a foot of pig junk. I use the word junk. It's a New Year's resolution. I'm trying to use better words. It's not working great. Where he's sitting in all this pig slop. And you know what the text says in Luke 15? When the son, quote, came to his senses, he took stock of his situation. There are some of you who have not taken stock. Your parents have told you that you should not have done that. Your grandparents told you that you should not have done that. I told you should not have done that. Your children are telling you should not have done that. And you have yet to say, you know, I shouldn't do this. There are a lot of us who refuse to seek wise counsel. We refuse it. You know, I want to do better this year. Well, you're probably gonna have to stop doing that. Oh, I don't think that's it. Yeah, it is. Yeah, we all know it. Yeah. It's maybe you're tired of always being out of breath. Maybe you're tired of always feeling bloated. Maybe you're tired of never knowing anything about what other people are talking about. Notice those three random things right here. It means you're going to have to figure out why it is that way and then make some moves. We have to figure out what it is we exactly need to do. And I know it's real specific, but be real specific. What do I need to do to get this done? How about this one, which is the worst one? Sacrifice. Look at verse 25. Moses chose to be mistreated with the people of God rather than to enjoy the temporary pleasures of sin. Church, sacrifice does not mean that you give something up. I have never heard a football coach say, hey, boys, go out there and we got to make a sacrifice. Go out there and lose the game. Sacrifice don't mean losing. And I know some people at work tell y'all, or some of y'all's family members tell you, why don't you make a sacrifice for the family? Do you know what they mean? They mean, why don't you take a loss? That's not a sacrifice. A sacrifice is not a loss. A sacrifice is a trade. Think about it. A sacrifice is that I'm going to take this temporary inconvenience, but in the long term, it's going to pay off. That's a sacrifice. Anything else is just a loss. Two NFL teams, my team lost last week in the college football playoffs. I didn't hear anybody on the talking heads say, Notre Dame made a sacrifice. No, Notre Dame just got their daylights beat out of them, right? They just got beat. They didn't make a sacrifice. There was no sacrifice. Church, when the text says that Moses chose to endure this temporary pain, in the long term, he gets this gain. The Hebrew writer loves to talk about the thing that abides. He talks about the everlasting possession. He talks about the unshakable kingdom. Let me tell y'all what we do in America. We put off pain to get the gain. We really good at it. Let me tell you how, because some of you are shaking your head no, and I understand you disagree. You're wrong, but it's fine. It's cool. It's fine. But let me just tell you why you're wrong. Because the average credit card debt in the United States as of yesterday is over $16,000 for each. Now some of you are like, whew, and some of you are like, man, is that all? Ooh, how'd I get that rate? It's just the average. That's the average. 50 years ago, that was nowhere close. Wasn't even in the same parking lot. And it doesn't mean 50 years ago they had it right. 50 years ago, if they could have had credit cards, they'd have done it too. We human. It's what we do. Why would anybody want pain? Y'all thought about that? You know, why would I've never seen a child when they come into the doctor's office, we got to give you a shot. And the child be like, yes, I was hoping for that. I was hoping when they say come to the doctor, we was going to get that. I was hoping when they say go to the dentist, man, I hope I got a cavity. I hope they just drill. Come on. Nobody likes pain. Nobody likes inconvenience. I just love traffic. I would ask you to raise your hand. Wouldn't know if y'all raise your hands, and if you do, you're lying. I love sitting in traffic for 45 minutes to an hour, especially you go downtown. Ooh, man. I love when the air conditioner goes out in August. I love when the heat goes out in January, right when the family comes over. I love when my family comes over. But come on now. Nobody likes pain, but here's what we do. I don't like when he comes over. So this time I made an excuse so he wouldn't come over. He called and I said, "Oh man, today's not good cuz I got my grandma, something happened. I got he don't know my grandma died, but he don't know that. My grandma and I got to go walk." What he really doesn't know is we named the dog Grandma. So that when he calls and says we come over, "Oh, I got to go walk Grandma." See, it sounds so much better now. It's a good strategy. Some of y'all writing that down, like you're going to name the dog Grandma now. So, you got this strategy. So we put off that person coming over. They're not going to come over and visit, right? And then they call a month later, "Hey, we didn't meet last time. Come on. You think I can come by? Man, it would be good. But kids have been sick," and you put it off. You know what happens when you see people less and less and less? When you finally do see them, what happens? It's all awkward. You know why it's awkward? Because you ain't seen them. How many of you haven't been to church in 3 or 4 months, and then you show up at church, like, man, it felt good. I kind of felt like an outsider because you've been outside. Some of you put off paying Chase. You put that off. You didn't want to. You didn't have the money. I know it was going to hurt. You had to pay a minimum fee of $25. You didn't have $25, so you didn't pay it. And you thought they would just leave you alone. I don't know who told you that. They lied to you. And then Chase sent you another bill next month. Not $25 this time, is it? No, $75. It's $25, and you had an interest charge and a late charge. And in the third month, guess what the charge is? It's still $75. You just owe that other $75 over here now. After a year, you know what happens when you go to pay that $25, $35 bill? It's metastasized into $85,000. It's probably not, but you get the picture. When you put off pain, pain grows. It grows. and it's too big to handle. If you'll put off the gain will grow. The gain grows. In our culture, we teach people, hey, I was trying to think with Kimberly. We was watching TV, and they had an advertisement for furniture. 6 months, no interest. It's like buying a car. We bought a sofa for the kids. And after 3 months, what did them kids do to that sofa? You ain't even started paying for it yet. But you got a sofa, though, didn't it? Let the kids sit on the floor, church. Let the kids sit on the floor. Embrace the pain, but off the gain. Because that pain is going to metastasize. We do this so backwards. Church, if you're thinking about making a decision, I encourage you, go on and embrace the temporary pain. It's going to be tough, I understand. But it'll be a lot better. Let me tell you this from experience. A withdrawal symptom, going through withdrawals with painkillers after 6 months, I promise you, you will rather do that than to go through the withdrawal after 2 years. I promise you. Don't put it off. Don't put it off. The reason we fail is because we don't want to embrace it. Moses decided, no, I think we'll go on and do that. And here's the real reason why, which is the last. Chapter 11, verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he grew up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Let me tell you the real reason why most of us cannot fulfill our obligation or achieve our dreams. Because we allow others to define what we do. How many of you have allowed your worth, don't raise your hand. How many of you have allowed your worth to be determined by your family? How many of you have allowed your beauty to be determined by your spouse? How many of you have allowed your future to be determined by society? We base our decisions on what others think. We make the call based upon what we think others might say to us. I want to read to you Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. I'm reading this from Calvin Duncan's Bible. This is the message. So this is Romans 12, verse 1 and 2. If you have your Bible and you're trying to follow along, you won't be able to. Don't try. Okay? This is the message. I want you to just listen to it here. Here's what I want you to do, Paul says. God help you. Take your everyday, ordinary life. You're sleeping, eating, going to work, walking around life. I want you to place it before God as an offering, and I want you to embrace what God does for you as the best thing you can do for Him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking about it. Instead, I want you to fix your attention on God. I want you to be changed from the inside out. I want you to readily recognize what He wants from you, and I want you to respond to it, unlike the culture around you that always just wants to drag you down. God brings out the best in us and develops maturity in all of us. The Phillips translation, which is an old translation, Phillips translation says, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. Church, I don't want us to allow anybody to set our pace. I don't want us to allow anybody to define what we do. And before, that was like the whole end of my sermon. Like, that was it. Like, I had some big thing planned. You know, don't let anybody do that. And I got to thinking about it. And I decided, let's just go on and be honest. The world will set the pace. Your family does have a hand in whether or not you feel valuable, right? How many of you have been shaped by whether or not your daddy actually loved you or not? How many of you have been dealing for years, with the realization that your mother is never, ever going to love you. So for me to sit up here and say, don't let people shape your life. On the other hand, let's just be real. They're going to do it. I have watched too many women. I have watched their self-esteem be destroyed because their husband measured their skills either in the nursery or in the kitchen or in the bedroom. And their self-esteem was determined, I guess, by some imaginary point system that their husband had come up with. So I can sit up here and say, ladies, don't let the man determine how valuable you are. But at the same time, I know that a lot of you already have. So for me to get up here and say, have faith. Don't let him do that no more. Let's make a decision. Let's stand and sing. It's not as easy as it looks, is it? Faith is not about just saying it. Faith is about recognizing the situation and knowing that it just ain't just going to work out on its own. Y'all know how I know this? Because I reread chapter 11, verse 23. It never dawned on me. I never saw it before, but I saw it this time. Moses' parents, by faith, they trusted God. We got this baby. Don't want nothing to happen to this baby. We trust that God's going to protect this baby. And so what did they do out of faith? They hid the baby. Anybody see a little contradiction with that? It's kind of, I didn't say, not the text, just kind of seems like they are. We trust God's going to protect this baby. We need to hide this baby. I trust that God is going to help me to pay this bill. I got to get me a second job. I got to pay this bill. I thought you trusted God to do that. I wonder if we've gotten faith backwards. We think faith is that God's just going to make it all happen. I want to sell our house. How much is the house worth? $200,000. How much you got in it? $300,000. How much you selling it for? $350,000. I'm not real good at math, but I'm pretty sure that's not going to work. I've told people that with that kind of dumb analogy. I know what I want to do. They don't take an inventory of what it's worth. It's never going to happen. And you know what answer they always give me? I have faith. And now I've started to think, I don't think that's faith. I kind of think that's stupidity. And I think you're trying to cover it up by saying it's faith. Right? We just put some religious language in it. We feel better about it. I don't know if y'all notice, but in the world we live in, truth is whatever you say it is. It's whatever you say it is. We just quote some numbers, that's just truth. It's whatever we say. That's not God's definition of truth, and that sure is not God's definition of faith. Faith is us understanding the real situation. And ladies, I know I talked about how your self-esteem is built, but men, how many of you have been kept up at night? You keep yourself up at night because you start asking yourself questions that you can't answer. Have I done enough? Have I made enough? Have I protected my kids enough? You want the truth? You didn't. You haven't. You never will. You cannot protect your children. You will never make enough. No, you have not done enough. Faith is not finding an answer. Faith is finally understanding what you're up against and sailing that boat anyway. You sail it anyway. You understand what's coming. But we're going to sail it. Even though we don't know how it ends, even though I know my boat is rickety, even though that I don't like the people I'm with, even though I'm not sure that it's going to work out, and even though I know that when I make this decision, everybody in my family and in my life and at work and my children, everybody is going to tell me it's the wrong decision. But I know it's the right decision. I'm going to dream again. Church, if you don't have a New Year's resolution, I'm not telling you to get one, but I'll tell you this. If you haven't dreamed, dream. You're not too old. You're not too old. You're not done. We have not stopped. You're not done. If you think this is the end of the road for you or for your child, it's not the end of the road. And if you think that people never change, you're right. They don't. But faith is not trusting in an eventual change in people. Faith is trusting in a God who does not change. Which means no matter what you do, he's not leaving. And I think I could put my faith in that. And I think I can walk stronger with that. This morning, if you don't know what you want to change, I don't know what to tell you. But I offer to do it with you as we stand and sing.